coming to you live from Uncle Meefley's wooden leg. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me, as always, is a compartment for an egg. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 72, What is Not a Metal Peg? Uncle Meefley's Wooden Leg!
Good times. Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, you most loyal readers. I'm Tom Rich.
They are still listeners, and I'm Johannes Stauffer.
It is so good to have y'all back here, gathered around the campfire again, cooking s'mores, and just putting your hands on each other's knees while the flames crackle up into the sky and
I'm
the lightning bugs.
So uncomfortable right now.
Just glistening in the moonlight all around us, and it's a little bit moist with the dew of the evening on all of the plants, and we're all just having such a magical time.
And now, it doesn't matter what we do for the rest of this episode, because everyone has already stopped listening.
So we can go go-karting?
Yeah, we can just be done.
All right, cool.
Go-karts it is.
Onward. We actually have to do an episode.
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, so welcome back. Good to have you. Do knee touching and so forth. Tonight on the Mildly Alarming Podcast, do we have a topic picked out? Did we pick one out?
We did. We picked one out. A number of players, how it affects
number
gameplay.
Number of players, how it affects gameplay, how it doesn't affect gameplay, how it affects design, how it doesn't affect design. Generally, all of the things that player count is impactful of.
Or isn't.
Impactful of. Yeah. And that's impactful as in having an impact, not impactful like the way your colon gets impacted when you can't get enough poop out of it. Poop jokes starting now, coming in hot later. Pay attention. We have a lot going on tonight.
There's a lot of poop going on. A
lot of poop. I haven't crapped in 7 days.
Wow. That's really... You should maybe see a doctor about that.
Why? He's just going to put his hand, you know, down there.
Okay.
I don't want...
Will it... I mean... Okay. I guess let's talk about games then.
Right. So, first game we're going to talk about, number of players. So, right. Yeah. Cool. What do you think about number of players, I guess, to start us off here? What? What are you laughing at over there?
Oh, nothing. What do you think about number of players? Let's start it off with just restating the topic as a question.
That's how you do that, right?
Well, it'll depend on the game. We probably should start off deciding if we're going to approach from a design standpoint or from a play standpoint. Are we trying to create a game and figure out the number of players it should work with, or are we talking about games that exist and how best to play them?
Let's do the second one.
Okay, so you know how Board Game Geek has a very useful rating, well, has a lot of very useful ratings, but one of the pieces of information that it gives for most games is... in addition to the number of players that it supports, the number of players that it is best to play with. I believe this is based on user ratings.
Probably.
But I don't actually know how Board Game Geek's reviews become what they are. That would be worth looking into, maybe. But whatever the case, so you'll often see a game that, you know, supports up to 6 players, and it'll say, you know, 2 to 6 players, best with 3.
Mm-hmm.
And... you see that a lot. We talk about this sort of in passing on the podcast fairly regularly too, and actually in games that we play, you know, oh, I wonder if it would be better with more people, or I wonder if that game would have gone faster with fewer. We talked about it in Livestock Uprising, how we've only seen it played with 2. Maybe it becomes a vastly different animal with 3 or 4. So where is a game best played? What number of players? And we've seen the same thing in Arkham. Arkham supports, I think you can go down to 2, I think.
Don't do that.
But don't do that. So we've actually played 2-player Arkham, but we both run more than one investigator, because otherwise you're going to get ruined. So the mechanics support it, but the game play doesn't
really.
So much.
Yeah. And another one we talk about a lot on the podcast, Eclipse, is a lot like that as well. You can play a 2-player game of Eclipse.
That sounds awful.
it's fine. My wife and I have played it. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no dynamics to it. It's just you're rushing at each other.
Yeah.
And whoever has the biggest head of steam by the time you bump into each other in the middle of the board wins.
Well, that's what I look for in a game, you know, when I'm trying to find a descriptor. You know, if I'm like, we could play all of these games, which one of them would you say is fine? That's mm-hmm. the one I want to play.
Yeah, it's just not fine. Great. It's like, I like Eclipse a lot, but two-player, it just leaves my jimmies completely unrustled. Internet memes, everyone. I know, right? You're just so disappointed to know me.
There were a way to communicate with audio only that gorilla face from the Russell Jimmy's meme. I would do that right now, but you can't. So
we could make it the picture for this one. It's not.
It's already the picture for our Twitter and Facebook, sort of.
Oh yeah, that's true. We're creative and, you know, unique.
Never,
individuals.
Never derivative.
Never
at
ever.
All.
But yeah, but like Eclipse and both Eclipse and Arkham also illustrate another good point with player counts that kind of builds off of the idea of there being an ideal number of players, which is that too many is horrid. Like Eclipse goes up to 9 with the expansion set. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling Devin that it did that, and he goes, why? Why would you do such a thing? And Arkham, I think Arkham goes up to 8, doesn't it?
Something we've like that. Done it with 8 or whatever the maximum number of players
it's
is.
It's awful.
It is painful.
Yeah, it's... Well,
see... So I think any game, when you get up to that number of players, has the potential, especially when it's got turns,
mm-hmm.
Has the potential to become really horrible.
Right.
Whether or not it's not necessarily the fault of the game or even the game's mechanics, but just the fact that many people all trying to focus and like the amount of time you have to wait until it is your turn to do something again comes around, just it can get pretty rough.
Ladies and Gentlemen does an interesting thing with that. Ladies and Gentlemen, for those that don't know, is a game where you're paired up into teams of 2, and it supports like 8 players or even more, I think it might. And one player on the team is a gentleman playing the stock market to make money. The other player is a lady who is using his money to buy hats. Trust me, it's not as horribly sexist as it sounds.
I think it's exactly as horribly sexist as it sounds.
Yeah, but it's horribly sexist in a funny way.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can make your giant burly friend, Johannes, play as the dainty lady buying hats, and it's entertaining then.
It was entertaining, yeah.
Especially when I'm the gentleman trying to, you know, buy him hats. He looked so pretty by the time I was done.
It's true, I did.
So anyway, Ladies and Gentlemen supports a lot of players, like 8, but it has everybody doing a lot of stuff all at once, so you don't wind up with those huge amounts of dead space, and so 8 players works better than it otherwise might.
Right.
I wouldn't go so far as to say it works, because it was still kind of rough when
well,
it
was
played
the first,
it.
First play for true. 6 out of 8 of us, I think.
True, fair enough. But it the only problem it ran into with the number of players is just keeping that many people on track at once.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do unless you have, you know, a real Iron Duke kind of personality that can whip him into shape. Or you have an actual whip for whipping.
Or an actual Iron Duke. Just like it's a, you know, a bronze or iron, a metal bust of a Duke.
A Duke being like the
I don't know why
rank.
I went to bronze first for an Iron Duke.
Yeah, I'm not really sure either. I was going to let it fly.
Yeah.
But do you mean Duke like the feudal title? Oh, where you control a certain amount of land under the king? Or do you mean Duke like the euphemism for a turd? Because this is the poop episode.
I meant Duke Nukem.
Oh.
With the sunglasses and the red tank top.
Right, right, yeah. Do you mean the 3D Duke Nukem, the regular Duke Nukem, or the forever Duke Nukem?
I meant the Duke Nukem from the original side-scroller. Actually, no. As described, I meant Duke Nukem 3D because this original side-scroller, he didn't have a... sunglasses.
Hmm.
So that was... I just replayed that whole game.
Is
the original
good?
Duke Nukem. It was actually pretty entertaining.
Hmm.
It was
good.
A lot of childhood nostalgia carried me through it. I don't think if it came out now as an indie game, I'd be like, this is good.
Right.
But I enjoyed it.
Kind of feel the same way about... I suspect I would feel the same way about Diablo 1 if I played it again.
Probably.
Because you can't run in that game, and oh my god, walking would be so
I remember. Even, you know... How long ago did Diablo 2 come out? Like 10 years ago?
It's more than 10 years, bro.
We went back and tried to play Diablo 1 and we're like, you can't run. This is the worst. It takes so long just to get to town.
Yeah, the 2 players of us playing it, that was the number of players in that game, because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, right.
I think there's a tendency in game design and in like hobbyist board games like we talk about here, to aim for like the 4 to 5 player sweet spot kind of.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of 2 player out there. And even the ones that are two-player often contain rules for, you know, buffing it up to more if you wanted to.
So I want to take it back a minute to, to a lot of players. Games that do that well also are Resistance and Resistance Avalon don't tend to drag too long because the player turns involve everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And are pretty quick. Same is true of Coup. Because even when it's someone else's turn, they might be targeting you. So you always kind of have to be paying attention to what's going on. And it's actually a really, I appreciate a mechanic that is elegantly involving everyone. It doesn't feel forced. It's not making you, it's not like dragging you in so you have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. But it is involving everyone in just enough way that you don't feel like you're going to go get distracted and wander off and look at something shiny. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good.
Whereas games, you know, with eight players where you're each taking a turn, like Arkham, that gets a lot of sitting around waiting for Gary to finish his turn.
Yeah. And that's a long wait.
It is a long wait.
It's bad. It's a bad
situation. I'd like to get back to that game we started of Arkham a year ago.
But he's still down there in the basement pondering.
He is, yeah. Eventually he'll move and then
hand in his chin.
We'll get on to
couch growing out the back of his head.
Couch growing out of the back of his head?
Yeah, that's a phrase, right?
I never heard it.
Oh, okay. We'll go with it.
It is now.
I probably stole it from somewhere.
All right, so we're going to move on to talking about games with lower number of players?
Yeah, well, I think there's a tendency to design for 4 to 5 in hobbyist games, and I think that's mainly because that's the size of a gaming group. Like, you can reasonably get 4 to 5 people together, and it's more interesting than a two-player game.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that doesn't limit the design space a little bit. And it's like, we're not aiming for 3 or we're not aiming for 2 because that's not what hobby nerd board games do. They aim for 4 to 5.
Yeah.
I wonder if that happens.
Well, you want to move to talking about design?
I don't know. We can if you want. Do you have another idea?
Well, I have a segue, but you're...
Go ahead, segue.
Sound like you were in the middle.
Segue. I wasn't. I was just babbling.
That was the segue. I mean, so you wonder if that limits your design space. Well, if you look at games that we've designed, we'll go to Big Man, and one day that game will be out, and people will actually have a better idea of what we're talking about when we reference it. It's pretty good. It's great.
We should probably just do a design diary on Big Man at one point.
Yeah.
Where we just go through the process of designing it, and then...
Yeah. We've even got those recordings of us spitballing it.
Yeah.
Ideas at one another. Anyway, Big Man is meant for... I guess 1 to 4 players. You could play it by yourself. Be a little weird.
Dippy, you could.
But you could. But one of the things we've struggled with is scalability in... Mostly in monster interactions. Because we have a lot of mechanics that are, you know, based on number of players and trying to make that scale in such a way that monsters are as threatening to 2 players as they are to 4, but not, like... vastly more so.
Sure.
And you know, you have to take into account number of things on the board. Now, this is specific to our game, but number of monsters on the board, how much damage they're able to do, how fast they move. And I don't know that we've hit a like sweet spot with Big Man where you have a reasonably similar experience of gameplay between a 2-player game, a 3-player game, and a 4-player game. Adding more players really does seem to change the dynamic, both mechanically and just among the players themselves.
I don't know that we've come close, really. Yeah. But I would say we've seen in another game we've played recently an example of a game that doesn't scale linearly, like like you're talking about, where it's radically different, more difficult at different player numbers, but it's still excellent, and that's Samurai Spirit. Samurai Spirit is pretty easy 2-player. I don't know if I'd say easy, but... it's beatable. You can do that. Mm-hmm. You can play the game and you can win it, and then you're done and you've won and it's been successful. You scale that bad light up to 4, it gets really hard really fast.
Okay.
And then you start going up to 6 or 7 Samurai, which I'm told is the name of Tupac's first rap album.
6 or 7 Samurai?
Yeah. It gets really difficult.
Okay.
It's hard. It's really hard, but it works.
So it does scale dynamically, but not... in order to make it exactly the same difficulty for each number of players, right? Because it wouldn't get harder with more players unless it were adding cards, you know, adding bad guys to match.
Well, it adds bad guys to match, but it also just adds so many more opportunities for things to go wrong for you.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Like, let me hit you with an example. If you've got two samurai, and one of them has the ignore the penalties on even cards, anytime you draw a card, there's a 50% chance it's going to be for that guy, and he can ignore the even.
Right.
If you've got seven, he's only got a one in chance, seven chance, or however many, seven chance.
Math.
Yeah, numbers. Of catching the card he needs to that he can ignore.
Okay.
So his any given samurai's abilities wind up diluted when this pool of samurai is bigger.
Okay.
And it might be, too, that the people we have playing Samurai Spirit just don't play it enough to get really good at it and be able to handle the seven or, you know, six or seven player games.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a number of things going on there, but I feel like it does get more difficult with more players.
I believe you. I've just, you said it. I think you said it doesn't scale dynamically, and what I was saying is it does scale dynamically. It just, like, it changes dynamically to match the number of players. It's just in the same way that Big Man scales dynamically to match the number of players. It just doesn't actually work out that means that your gameplay difficulty and experience is going to be the same.
I don't remember the exact word is. I might have said dynamically, but I think what I meant is it doesn't scale linearly, so the difficulty doesn't match the number of players. It scales more exponentially.
Sure.
So even though you're getting more tools as the number of players increases, it's getting way harder. It's not just increasing to match the number of tools. It's increasing to match them and then some each time.
Yeah. So I think a question then from a design standpoint is, how much should you take number of players into account when you're designing a game? And obviously you have to take that into account. But should you set out to design a game saying, I want to make a game for five players? Or should you set out to design a game saying, this is the game I want to make, and if the mechanics and theme and whatever work out best, where the maximum number of players it can have is three, or maybe the minimum number of players it can work with is five, do I need to try to break the thing I've built to make it work with a wider variety of player numbers?
I don't think so. As long as you're not looking at completely wacky player numbers, like 15 or something like that, I think you're fine just making the game for the number of players that makes sense for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people play... I mean, Resistance's minimum is five, and we still get a reasonable amount of play out of that. I want to play that again, by the way.
Yeah,
we should
too.
Play it. You know, Onirim, we've talked about before. We like that a lot.
Yeah.
It's 1-2.
Yeah, which is really strange.
And it worked, but it works very, very well. You know, so I think you've got to make the number of players make sense for the game and the mechanics you're working with. I don't know that it's really worthwhile deliberately trying to. I mean, if it works, to add extra players and go for it. But you know, it kind of is what it is based on what you've got.
Yeah, it's kind of so. The last few episodes, we've been kind of taking this approach to board games that they are toys. Board games are toys.
Mm-hmm.
They're a thing that's fun to do and to do fun things with. But the flip side of that is that board games really are kind of an art form too, and if you were to try to change your game to be more marketable because it fits a wider number, you know, a greater range of player numbers, but it somehow impacts the game that you originally created, that's kind of like, what's the word for it? When you're
selling,
yeah, like giving up your artistic integrity.
Yeah, I suppose.
You suppose?
I suppose I never really think about that when I'm board game designing, but
sure.
But I also don't really think about whether or not it will be marketable either.
Yeah, I put a little bit of thought into the marketable. I put more thought into the marketable when we're designing than I do into the other. But I don't think I would put it into so many words and be like, well, we're giving up our artistic integrity if we do that. But I think I would not be inclined to try to make the change to a game we'd already designed to make it more marketable if it meant making significant changes to something we'd put a lot of time and effort into
and
I thought was thematically and mechanically sound.
Yeah, making it less interesting as a game.
Yeah.
If it made it more marketable. The other nice thing about board games is that they're nicely modular.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to make something more marketable for a small number of players but include optional rules for additional players, that's pretty easy to do. You know, that's an extra page of rules or an extra, you know, half page of rules to set that up, depending on the game. If you want to make the game work best for three players, but include extra rules for, hey, double it, you can do that pretty easily.
Uh-huh.
So that's nice. That's a nice thing about board games.
It depends, though. So take Big Man again, for example. our maximum number of players is 4 players, the game would function with more players. But we have it designed in such a way that so many things code to the player's color. Their players, the color of their piece, their meeple or whatever we end up using. Merson is, I guess, the singular of meeple. That it would be really hard to do because we have, you know, 4 color-coded starting things on the starting card. Mm-hmm. We have color-coded, do we still have those actually?
They dropped them because they don't work well.
So really the starting spaces would be the only thing. So now you could scale Big Man a lot more easily than you were able to before. We used to have certain cards that were, if you were the blue player and you had a card that had a blue circle in one corner, it meant you got more for, mm-hmm. you know, it gave you more speed than it would give another player or whatever.
Nobody ever used it, so it didn't seem like
I didn't get a lot of use out of it.
Well, the it was so situational.
Yeah.
You had to be playing that card, playing that color, draw that card, have a need for that particular ability on your turn. Like if it was on run, you had a need to run with that card on that turn. Have that be the best card you could play for it, and have one extra point of it make any difference whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it was pretty.
And have it be a bad enough card on other applications as a dungeon tile as a fight card or whatever that you were willing to give it up
exactly
rather than spending two of a different card. It was a good idea. I just didn't end up that's like, you know, play testing. Just gotta go back, always play test a whole lot,
just play your game until you don't like it anymore. That's how art works, right? You make a thing and you like it a lot, and then you just look at it until you hate it.
Write and rewrite until you hate it and don't publish,
and then you curl up into the fetal position and you die alone and, you know, bitter.
Yeah. Yep.
That's how that goes, right?
We're working toward that with an album right now. We practiced the song so many times that half the band are like, we just don't want to play these songs anymore.
I certainly don't want to play them anymore.
Yeah. Well, Tom and I are in a band called Patrick Stewart Does Not Perform in This Band.
So if you're looking for a band that Patrick Stewart performs in, it's not.
It's actually not this one.
It's not that one.
Yeah.
I play the yukazoo, which is a combination of ukulele and kazoo.
Actually, there's a guy who made that. He calls it a kazoo-kalele.
That's better than what I said.
The body of it is also one of those little children's pianos, so it's a kazoo ukulele piano. He performs the Final Countdown on it on YouTube, and it's hilarious. Not good by any stretch of the imagination, but funny.
How could that possibly not be the best thing that ever happened?
I don't think he's the best singer in the world, which makes his not only singing but also kazooing a little bit subpar.
Fair enough.
But still, he made a kazoo-kalele.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Number of players.
Yeah, I think that's good. You want to be aware of it. You want to keep it in mind. You know, I mean, the thing is that the number, it depends too a lot on, you know, co-op versus competitive. Because if you've got, like, if you got a 7-player game of Eclipse going on, there's no alliances forming, that's 6 other people you've got to pay attention to who might be trying to kick your teeth in.
Right.
You start letting alliances in, that gets a little better. So you've got to be aware as you're designing the game of what that kind of dynamic you're looking for is. Are you looking for a cutthroat free-for-all situation? Or is it more of a Arkham thing where it's cooperative, where you're paying attention to your allies because you want to know that they're doing well, that they're working to help you, to do stuff with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that really tells us anything.
Well, I'd be interested to hear from our listeners if they have games that they've played that either they've seen a drastic change in gameplay when changing the number of players, or that they have made their own house rule edits to allow for more or fewer players where you wouldn't necessarily expect that. You know, if someone's come up with an actually interesting way to do a 1-player game of Eclipse, Tom wants to hear from you.
I want to hear from you so bad.
Yeah. So if you have ideas about that, I guess you can tell us very, very briefly or in a lot of tiny little 140-character messages on Twitter @mildlyalarming.
You can write to us at length at our email address at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can leave, I believe, an unrestricted number of characters in the comment section on our website at www.mildlyalarming.com. Or you could also leave just a nice 5-star review on iTunes and write it in the comment section there.
Or if you really want to get a hold of us, the best way is to fly a drone and land it on the White House lawn. And then you'll be arrested and go to prison, and we will be waiting for you in your cell.
We'll be right there.
We'll be waiting.
See ya.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
What a god-awful load of garbage work day. Just a shower of warm mucus from a gigantic nose.
Sounds like you had a rough day there, buddy.
Why are you in my car?
Because after a seething butt pile of a workday, you deserve an unseething anti-butt pile of a snack. That's why I brought you a box of tater wheats.
Those aren't words. Seriously, the doors were locked. How did you get in here?
Oh, that's cute that you think locks can stop me. You know what else is cute? The little shapes that we bake tater wheats into. Hexagons, triangles, even little dogs and eldritch symbols dripping with blasphemous evil. Aren't they adorable?
Come to think of it, how did you even know I was here?
We've been watching you, Alan. Watching you as we bake up batch after batch of delicious tater wheats.
Okay, I'll bite. What's a tater wheat?
I knew you'd ask, Alan. They always ask. Each tater wheat is made with 100% real, fresh-cut tater. Our specialized machinery, operated by only the finest hooded Cenobites, grinds the tater into a fine powder. Then it's off to the mixing plant, where we mix in all the diapers that we can learn in Mexico, before we shape it and bake it into a crisp, crunchy wheat. Perfect for snacking!
What was that in the middle there?
I don't know what you're talking about. Have a tater wheat.
I'm not sure.
Now, wasn't that tasty?
It was.
Tater wheats. Eat a box. Eat them. 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 Eat them.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm a hive of termites inhabiting the husk that was once Tom Rich.
I thought you were going to say a hive of turkeys. I don't know why I thought that.
I want turkeys to live in hives.
It would be great, but terrifying. And can you imagine all the poop and feathers?
There would be so much feather poop.
That's probably what they would make the hive out of.
The feathers and the poop?
Just poop and feathers.
The feather and feathers and the poop could be the title of a novel.
The Feathers in the Poop by E. Tom. Wait, no, your first name is Tom. Dang it. T. Ezra Rich. Is that what I was going for?
Yeah, probably.
I was going to say E. Thomas Rich, and I was like, that's not how your name works
it's
at all.
It's not even close. It's close, I guess, but it's not accurate.
Well, if you couldn't tell by our slurring and inability to remember one another's names or say the word inability, it's time for another episode?
Installment?
Nope. That's the word I'm looking for. It's time for another installment. Thanks, babe. Of
here for you.
Booze in the News. There's already music. It just played.
I wanted to do
it. Didn't you hear it?
I wanted to do it with my mouth.
Okay. I'll say,
hey. So you wanna start us off, or you want me to?
I believe whatever works for you.
All right,
fine.
I'll start us off because we've been talking about poop all episode, including turkey poop just a minute ago, and I got some poop related news from Yahoo News going on here, so we know it's good.
All right.
This article is at news.yahoo.com, and it's called "Japan Mulls Emergency Toilets in Elevators."
It mulls them like you mull wine.
Like
it has emergency toilets and elevators already, but now it has sort of brought them to a boil with some spices.
I guess if you had an emergency toilet and you brought it to a boil with spices, it would make the pooty gas smell better.
Probably not.
You don't think boiling spiced crap smells better than regular crap?
I would tend to doubt it.
Fair enough.
I think spices or no, boiling crap probably smells worse.
I think we need to conduct elaborate and extensive double-blind studies to confirm this.
All right. Gary, smell this. Better or worse, number one or number two?
It's always number two. Anyway, Japan is looking at the first thing here. Japan is looking at installing toilets and elevators and providing an emergency supply of drinking water for people trapped by the nation's frequent powerful earthquakes, an official said Wednesday.
Are the toilets also the drinking water?
I hope not.
I also hope not.
So they're looking for ways, because apparently, and this I didn't realize, their estimates for the next big one, next giant earthquake that hits Japan, indicate that it could leave up to 17,000 people stranded in elevators.
That's a lot of elevators.
Well, I guess Tokyo is like entirely
or
vertical.
Not very many really big elevators.
I guess Tokyo is very vertical. It's a pretty, you know, high-tech city, so
yeah.
A lot of elevators, a lot of people, a lot of people stranded.
It's on an island like the rest of Japan, so they kind of have to build up so that they don't build out.
The whole of Japan is island.
That's what I said.
It's 100%.
100% real, fresh-cut island.
But, that's what they're planning to do. They're looking for, they're looking at collapsible camp toilets that you could crap in when you're trapped in the elevators. Or, and this is what I thought was interesting, apparently some elevators in Japan have benches that the elderly can sit on.
Huh.
And so they're thinking, what if those benches were also toilets?
What if all benches were also toilets?
And you could duke wherever you wanted?
I know some people who probably already feel that way about benches.
Let's get on this, America. So that is the first related story we've got for tonight.
Well, here, this one's not quite poo related, but it's halfway there. I do not care even a tiny little bit about sports, but this is the greatest piece of sports news perhaps ever published. Broncos enforce fart tax in meetings. Von Miller is fined most frequently.
Majestic.
I don't know or care who Von Miller is, other than that apparently he's the fartiest Bronco, which could also be the title of a children's book.
Yeah, yeah.
Von the fartiest Bronco.
Actually, I think that should be the first mildly alarming children's book.
Yeah, get on that. I'll draw the pictures. So, there's really not a whole lot to say about this. Apparently he farts a lot, and now he gets fined for it when it happens. This is actually happening. Here's a quote from this Von Miller person, who apparently is some sort of football player. "They can't fine me if I get up and walk away. It's not healthy. I keep trying to tell them it's not healthy if I just sit there and hold it in. Nobody in the world does that. I just do it more than the average person." And the writer of this article, who is probably a horrible person because they make a living writing sports news, but this end is pretty good. Von Miller, the Broncos sack and fart machine, has a point. Let the man fart for free.
That's amazing.
I like to think that they just, like, you know how some families have like a swear jar, like if they're trying to stop swearing or they're trying to keep their kids from swearing, you have to put like a dollar or a quarter or whatever in every time you say a swear. I like to think that the Broncos
have a
national
jar.
Football team has a fart jar, and Von Miller is just really mad and like disappointed every time he has to drop a quarter into the fart jar. He probably gets blamed now, like when other people fart, they're like, "Oh, Von, that's disgusting." And he's like, "Hey, he who smelt it dealt it." And they're like, "No, Von, put a quarter in the fart jar."
No, Von, he who made the rhyme did the crime. Yeah. I like that article because it echoes almost word for word and certainly content for content an argument that I have on a weekly basis with my wife.
Oh, yeah?
Tom,
does she fart a lot?
You're like, that's where I went. Like a Clydesdale.
They're known for farting. That's why they're called draft horses.
Well played. But no, it's like, you should hold that fart in because it smells really bad. And I'm like, it's unhealthy to hold the fart. And she's like, then you should just die of butt fart disease.
It's not like holding it in will help. It'll just ooze out your pores for the rest of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah, that's how farting works.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, actually, after like the 88th time we had that argument, I looked it up on the internet.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, yes, holding in your farts is bad for you. Like, you shouldn't do it. But they're all going to come out as soon as you fall asleep. even if you hold them in. Like, you can't hold them. It would be bad for you if you held them in indefinitely.
Yeah.
But
you can't.
As long as you are ever unconscious on a regular basis, your body is just going to be like, we're just going to ooze that on out.
So what if you have a shart, right? You're like, man, I feel like I really have to go. And then you make it to the bathroom and it's like just a little like poo cork, you know, it's like just like a marble and then just like, you know, a gallon or two of gas that was stopped up behind that. Uh-huh. At that point, if you had just gone to sleep, is your body like, screw the poo cork, I'm going for it?
I don't think science is equipped to answer that question.
Well, we need to find out. Let's get our top men on this.
Gary.
Gary Smulahan, podcaster, fart scientist.
Truly, he is a renaissance man for our time and an inspiration to us all.
It's true. Good on you, Gary.
Good on you.
What do Gary. You got?
All right, our third article, or my second article, I guess, our total third article, is from sayanythingblog.com.
More like our total turd article.
And so we know it's good because it's from somebody's blog. And
it's a news source, right?
Yeah. It's entitled, North Dakota Town is Running Short on Poop.
Oh, I can help.
So can I. Apparently, the town of Ray, North Dakota, was right in the middle of that oil boom they had in North Dakota over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. where there was just huge numbers of people streaming in, and they were mining all the oil, and it was great, and there was a big boom in the economy and all that, and everything was going great. And so Ray, the town of Ray, that is, expecting this boom to carry on and to have some lasting impact, invested heavily in expanding their sewage system.
Right.
But unfortunately, that boom has slowed, and now not only do they have not as many people as the sewage system could handle. It could handle like up to 3,000 people.
Uh-huh.
They don't have enough to keep it like maintained. Like, ooh, there's not enough duty water flowing through the sewage system to keep it like functional. Like it's
lubricated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to go to pot. It's not going to work.
Lubricated. It's going to go to pot.
Yeah. So
our fathers would be at once so proud and so disappointed. Actually, is your dad a big punnist?
Not really. No.
Well,
no.
My father.
No, but I've heard the man laugh until I thought he was going to actually, you know, keel over. So that's good. He might find it funny. It was when I told the pirate has the steering wheel down his pants joke.
That's one of the greatest jokes.
It's fantastic. For those that haven't heard it, a pirate walks into a bar with a steering wheel down the front of his pants. And the bartender goes, hey, man, what's with the steering wheel? You got a steering wheel down the front of your pants. And the pirate goes, "Arr, I know, it be driving me nuts." And I told that joke once just out of the blue to my mom and dad. Oh, I thought it was the end of my father right there. He was laughing. It was great.
Worst ways to go.
Yeah, it's true. But anyway, the town of Ray has such a problem with insufficient duty to take care of their sewer system that they're actually letting nearby like RV parks and empty their sewage into their sewers for free just to get enough poop going through to keep it going.
Keep it moving.
Yeah.
You know, so there's another podcast that I listen to that I think you have listened to on occasion called We Have Concerns.
I like that podcast.
Which you should absolutely check out. If you think our podcast is even a little bit entertaining, you will like theirs even more because they're actually trained actors. And when they put together a little, like, on-the-spot, what's the thing where
vignettes?
You do comedy as is like a sketch?
Like improv?
Yeah.
Are they improvising those?
Yeah, yeah. Those, they don't write anything. They don't even read those articles ahead of time.
Wow.
They just get them. And
they're
like,
a lot better at this than we are.
They sort of know what they are, and then they just riff the whole time. Yeah, they're incredible. One of them shouts and is angry all the time, and the other one tries to be the voice of reason, and the first one hurts his feelings and is mean. So it's kind of like our podcast, but they're better at it than we are.
Right, right.
But they had,
and we don't say that just because the check cleared.
They had an episode that I heard recently about, this is how I get my news now, you can sell your poop to like hospitals.
Yeah!
To do fecal transplants. Yeah. And like if you, you know, if you test well, if you have good, effective duty, you can make like a fair amount of money, you know, as supplemental income donating. I think it's like once a week. It's just like you go down to the poo bank and make a deposit. And maybe this town could implement something like that too. You know, less money, because it doesn't need mm-hmm. to be poo of any particular quality, but it's like, hey, you know, we'll give you a fiver if you come down once a week.
use any toilet in town.
Just go for it.
Just poop. You just gotta poop.
Yep.
That's all we want. Fecal transplants are crazy.
Yeah, it's so weird.
That works.
Plus the number of things that it fixes that were like previously incurable.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, just put someone else's poop up there.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Or down there.
I remember I heard a radio thing on NPR about it one week, and they actually interviewed like an old lady who'd had one.
Yeah,
and she's like, I remember when the doctor came in and told me about it. I said, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. It's my old lady voice. Sorry, it's the best I can do.
Wasn't bad.
Yeah. So yeah, poop. Poop will cure all your ills, ma'am, or at least some of them.
Some of them, probably not all. Probably not very many.
It depends.
Probably only when administered properly by a professional. Please don't just start drinking poop shakes.
Speaking of administered properly by a professional and poop, have you heard about the
oh dear God.
The vibrating constipation clearing poop pill?
Yeah, I think we talked about this on the air already.
Did we already do that on the air?
Yeah.
Where you swallow it and after a certain time it starts vibrating in your colon and it shakes loose your constipation?
Yeah, that was early on. That was in like episode one or two.
Wow, this podcast really has come a long way in 15 or 16 episodes.
Yep, just lots of poop talk.
Lots of poop talk. Anyway, on to the next article for Booze in the News. I think it's your turn, right?
Yeah, I don't have a good segue for this except that, you know, cows poop a lot, I guess. So I thought the headline for this was funny, but the more I read, the more I enjoyed this article. A woman attacked by a runaway cow in Lerwick, which I believe is near or maybe a part of Sheffield in England. It sounds English at any rate. This woman was taken to the hospital after being attacked by an out-of-control cow, which went on the rampage in Lerwick. Not a rampage, but the rampage.
It's sort of like how they don't say you're in the hospital, but you're just in hospital.
Yeah. The cow, believed to have escaped from a park in the area, was first spotted about 7:30 p.m. on the path back of some place, blah, 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 who cares. So anyway, lady was attacked by a cow, trampled a little bit,
mm-hmm.
just bruised, she was fine. Another person, also attacked, trampled, bruised a little bit, fine, by the cow. But this final, just, this is beautiful. This is so amazing. So both of the victims who were treated for bruising were later released from the hospital. This is the final line of mm-hmm. this article. At about 8:30 p.m., the police were trying to corner the beast, and a 4x4 with an animal trailer attached was seen entering the road. Another cow was brought in to try and help the situation. That's the end of the article.
It doesn't go anywhere from there?
There was a link that says more to follow, but it's not a link yet. It doesn't go anywhere.
Majestic.
So we don't yet know how effective the other cow was in talking down the first cow. Mooing down? I don't know.
Damn it, Officer Angus. You're a loose cannon. Utter?
Moo. I don't know.
That's amazing.
Also, it says Seafield, and I think that's where I got Sheffield from. So maybe nowhere close to Sheffield. Sorry, English people. I don't know or care.
They'll be okay.
They'll be fine.
They've got that whole empire thing to keep them warm at night.
It's true.
They don't have that anymore.
I don't know. I don't, like, maybe. Some people would probably say it's still an empire. I'm not going to fight about it.
Fair enough. You've been there.
They have a bigger navy than I do. Not safe to fight them about it.
They have the nation
yep.
of the United Kingdom has a larger navy than you, Johannes the podcaster.
Yeah.
How big is your navy?
I've got like a rowboat with a hole in it.
Don't you have a couple of kayaks?
A couple of kayaks.
But do you have the manpower to staff that whole navy though at once? Because you've got you, of course. That's
yeah.
one guy.
Yeah.
And you've got your wife. That's two. But like, I don't know. Can you, you've got two kayaks and a rowboat.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'd have to keep the rowboat in reserve.
Or you'd have to hire mercenaries.
Especially with the mildly alarmy, you know, engaged elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true. That would be a problem.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm not picking a fight. The British.
Yeah.
My mistake. Maybe. I could have been right. I don't know. What else do you have?
I have one more article tonight, and it segues nicely out of your barnyard animals and into my feces.
your personal feces. There's actually a news story about your feces.
Yeah.
Why didn't we lead with this?
There's a lot of news stories about my poop.
Wow.
It's rich. It's
prodigious.
Prodigious, redolent, and heady with spices.
I think it's heady.
Heady? What? I think it's pronounced sepulcher.
It's the stocks for a pillory.
Right, but anyway, moving back along to poop and farmyard animals, Shameless Pig, and this is from abc13.com, it's the number 13, the numerals 1 and 3, Shameless Pig poops inside police cruiser and has no regrets about it.
How do they know?
I'll tell you.
All right.
So this actually comes from relatively near us. It's from Shelby Township, Michigan, which is not far from where we are. It's not close, but it's not far.
Relative to what?
It was
complete nonsense. It was useless information for all people.
It is in the same region of Michigan as we are in.
Southeast Michigan.
It is in Southeast Michigan.
It's not all that far.
It's not like you have to drive up to the Thumb or to Mackinac area or to the UP or to the shore of Lake Michigan or to the secret part of Michigan we don't let the rest of the country know about.
Hey.
But anyway, over in Shelby Township, this pig... apparently got loose. It was a loose pig, and it was chasing this lady around.
It was a loose pig with loose poops, apparently.
The pig suddenly charged toward her from out of nowhere, this lady who was doing her thing in her yard. And eventually she called the police of Shelby Township and said, I got a pig running me down in my yard. And she thought it was funny, because like, it's a pig. It's not like it's a boar with tusks. It's just a regular pig. So it's... They're not safe animals to be around, but it's not like it's, you know...
It's not going
to
gore you.
Yeah, it's not the most dangerous animal that could be attacking you in your yard. So the cops caught the pig and put it in the backseat of his patrol car.
Yeah.
At which point the pig proceeded to duke everywhere and just root around in it and scatter it all over the back of the car. And according to the article, the pig just had a big grin on it. It was grinning like a pig in really. And so they eventually discovered the pig's owner and returned it to that owner, and the owner was good enough to clean up the police car for
him. That was very kind of the owner. Yeah.
So
I would have been like, hey, that's what you get for arresting my pig. I actually wouldn't. I'd probably have been like, hey, I have this pig and I already have to clean up pig poop all the time. Maybe just take one for the team for once.
So this pig, he pooped up a police car, and he didn't even feel bad.
Yes, officer, please don't tase me. I will clean out the back of your patrol car. Well, I got one left.
Oh, you do? I thought that was it.
No, it's about everyone's favorite superhero, Florida Man.
Yeah.
Florida Man claims he...
Is there poop?
Sadly, well, I don't think so.
Where Florida Man is involved, there's almost always poop.
There is often poop, but this time the poop, you know, he may have had to poop, but it's not made clear in the article. Florida man claims he danced on patrol vehicle to save children from vampires.
But there's cops, so it segues nicely.
Yes, it segues from the cops.
I feel like this isn't really funny and more like it's a good art. It's heroic because, like, you should save children from vampires. And if that requires you to dance on a cop car, you dance.
It's true.
You get jiggy-witted on that cop car. Yeah.
You're Will Smith.
So what else? What about it?
He did this. 44-year-old Christian Radecki of Cape Coral. So they have now unmasked Florida Man, and we all know who he is. Was arrested April 7th after he was caught on surveillance video bumping his car into the back of a Lee County Sheriff's Office marked patrol vehicle. He then began dancing on the patrol vehicle's roof while music blared from his car, and then broke the windshield wipers and took an American flag from the neighbor's yard.
It all checks out. Okay.
Yep. So he says it all began when a woman with fangs came to his door threatening that a human sacrifice was about to occur involving vampires. Quote, therefore, Radecki made the conspicuous decision to get the sheriff of Nottingham's help to help him stop the slaughter of small children, the report states. He told officers that he had not taken any recreational drugs or alcohol, has not been diagnosed with any mental health conditions, nor did he take any prescribed medication. He was taken to the Cape Coral Hospital for medical clearance, then transferred to the Lee County Justice Center in apparent good health. And this is the greatest thing. I normally don't care about the authors of these articles, but way to go, Jennifer Logston of Fox 4, the number 4, fox4now.com in Florida. This is the final sentence. For the record, his dance playlist started with Hall & Oates' Rich Girl and ended after Supertramp's Goodbye Stranger.
awesome.
So now we know at least how to begin and end our dance playlist when we need to dance vampires away from children.
I feel like that's the best way to keep them away from children.
Yep.
Like, it's a very underrated vampire repellent.
You know, they hate dancing, I guess.
You got your garlic, you got your running water, you got your wooden stakes, but nobody ever talks about just the raw soul of dance.
And the music of Supertramp.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
So good on you, Florida man.
Good work, Florida man.
When they let you out, just keep fighting those vampires.
Keep fighting that good fight, Florida man.
Dance them away.
Dance them.
Dance.
Dance.
Okay.
Oh,
Boots and Cats.
We're not doing this? Okay.
Well, that's all I got. So that's the end of Booze in the News?
End of Booze in the News. We talked about poop.
And then we talked more about poop.
We talked about cops and farmyard animals.
And farts.
And farts.
And then Florida Man. And more.
And more poop. Is this the end? Is this the end of the podcast?
Like forever, because they're not going to let us do it anymore?
Probably. If there's nobody who can stop us from doing this, has our civilization truly succeeded?
Did you see the 40th season finale of Saturday Night Live, hosted by Louis C.K.?
You showed me part of it.
Yeah, that's right. So he's doing this really, I won't ruin it, go find it, it's on Hulu.
It's amazing.
He's doing this bit that's like, really, how did you get the permission to do this on network television? And he gets like an ooh from the audience, and he goes, yeah, how do you think I feel? This is my last show, probably. And that's how I feel.
Louis C.K. is a funny man.
He's brilliant. So with that, I think we're finished.
We're finished?
With this episode.
We can stop now?
We can stop
now. Are you going to unchain me?
If you think we missed anything that we should have brought up about poop, you can let us know on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can drop a hot load into our inbox at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or on our website in the comments section at www.mildlyalarming.com. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher.
Or you can just take a crap. Just poop and we'll know.
We will know. We know when you poop.
We know all about your poop.
Everything there is to know.
Everything.
So we'll see you next week on the Mildly Alarming podcast.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Terrible podcast.
100 years ago, the Wright brothers built an airplane. And over the next century, airlines wrapped their routes around this world, pulled them tight, and squeezed it into something a little bit smaller. But don't you think we've lost something over the years? Some essential quality of air travel? Didn't it used to be better?
Hi, I'm Booze Rorington, founder, CEO, and god king of Mildly Alarming Airlines. With service to upwards of 11 cities on one continent, we're the fastest growing airline whose name starts with an M. And we're not just about rapid expansion and fantastic profits. At Mildly Alarming Airlines, the passengers are first. Literally, because the cockpit is at the back of our plane. I mean planes. We have more than the one. On a Mildly Alarming flight, you'll be treated like an Egyptian pharaoh, in that we'll wrap you up in bandages and stuff you in a box. It's safer than a chair and in no way designed so that when we crash, you'll already be in a coffin and ready for burial. I mean, if we crash. We don't crash often. At all. We don't crash. We never crash. Can we edit this? Can we cut it? No? Damn. Our friendly flight attendants will bring you anything you want to eat or drink, as long as those things are Diet Pepsi, and actually we don't have any food. That part was a lie. And we're pleased to announce that it's been 6 months since any of our flight attendants have slapped a passenger. So that's good. We've got service to such exotic cities as Hoboken, Nantucket, Hamtramck, Kippisipamining, Nundlesbumby, Tuscaboosta, and new for this year, Wittishawanamahanaha. And you know that when you fly Mildly Alarming Airlines, you'll get there on time, some of the time. Mildly Alarming Airlines, welcome aboard.